For every person in the U.S. who dies by suicide, 25 others attempt it. And that's about a million suicide attempts a year. Until recently, though, people who tried to kill themselves were not considered valuable resources in efforts to fight suicide. In the latest installment in our series, Suicide, A Crisis in the Shadows, WBUR's Lynn Joliker tells us why that's changing.
Mary Esther Roman of Belmont knows what it means to hit rock bottom, or worse. As she describes it, the bottom fell out.
They wanted to lock me up in a state hospital and throw away the key as being incurable.
She tried to kill herself many times, starting in her late 30s. But thanks to the right depression treatment, self-motivation, and a sweet twist of fate, at the age of 67, Roman is in a very different place.
When I was 55, I met my soulmate, and I'm so happy. You never can tell what life is going to bring you. You've got to wait and see what the next chapter is going to be.
Craig Miller of Townsend also knows the dark place of feeling suicidal.
I always had thoughts of suicide since I was 8 years old. I always struggled with depression. I always struggled with mental health issues.
Miller made several suicide attempts, but he recovered, turning his mental suffering into a force to help himself and others.
It's no longer dark, and it no longer hurts, and it's no longer painful, and it no longer has this power over me that it used to have.
Both Miller and Roman experienced serious childhood trauma. Roman's alcoholic father died when she was 10. She says her mother was a prescription drug addict and alcoholic who neglected her. The two were homeless for a time. She started abusing her mother's pills when she was 13.
I was furious. I hated everybody, so I ended up hating myself.
Miller, who is now 39, says he was molested by a man in his neighborhood from the age of 6 to about 12.
A lot of the incidences occurred in a crawl space beneath my house. So there were times when these issues were going on, and I could hear my family above me, and I could hear the footsteps. So it was very, very dark circumstances.
On top of it, he says kids in the neighborhood knew about the sexual abuse and bullied him for it. By his teen years, Miller says, he was racked by obsessive-compulsive disorder, depression, and anxiety. His family's home life was turbulent. His mother tried to help him by taking him to support groups. He was hospitalized 5 times as a teen for suicidal thoughts and OCD. But Miller's last and most serious suicide attempt, which left him clinging to life at the age of 20, was a wake-up call.
To say, all right, if I'm going to live and I'm going to move forward with the rest of my life, I have to figure out how to do it with the past that I've had.
He says he dove into meditation and a 15-year journey of self-discovery. He made it a hobby to break open and dissect his emotions. He reached out for counseling at times he felt overwhelmed. And though he isn't recommending this to anyone else, he says, he did not take psychiatric medications in those initial years. He sometimes takes antidepressants now.
I made myself the number one priority in the world. I made getting well the biggest thing I could possibly focus on. More than anything, I found purpose in my pain.
Until the last year or so, the experiences of suicide attempt survivors were largely excluded from suicide prevention work. Debbie Helms, the director of Samaritans of Merrimack Valley, explains why.
Fear, basically. I think the fear was that they might still be at risk. Would they be safe talking about it with people? You know, liability, all these different kinds of issues. And I think enough has been done so far to say they have a very, very good voice at the table. They have that information that everybody else needs to get on board with policy making and trying to get more resources out there.
Suicide prevention organizations have begun creating special divisions for suicide attempt survivors. A national group had attempt survivors draw up recommendations for how to help those who are suicidal. Attempt survivors are creating websites to share their stories, and support groups are popping up around the country, including several in Massachusetts.
Look at me. Look at what I've done. Look at
Craig Miller facilitates one of those support groups. He also wrote a memoir he says was a huge part of his healing. Since then, he's been invited to speak around the country about climbing from the depths of suicidal thinking.
I get to speak and help people. I mean, that is an incredible feeling. And I have this incredible support system around me. My wife is absolutely amazing. My kids are wonderful. I have a great job, a great career. things are completely different now. I think that positive message needs to be louder and louder and more prevalent in the suicide prevention community.
For Mary Esther Roman, the journey of self-discovery began when she was working on a master's degree in sociology and then a PhD in social welfare policy. She had gotten through college despite doing a lot of drugs and drinking. Her graduate research was related to alcoholism.
And I said, oh my God, that's me. You know, I had no idea, because people I hung around with drank as much as I did.
So Roman became sober, and she immediately fell into a deep depression. In the next few years, she became suicidal, had to quit her job, and went on Social Security disability insurance. Her mother, who had neglected her as a child, came to take care of her. She was hospitalized several times on a round-the-clock watch.
I didn't speak, which is hard to believe now, but I didn't speak for many years. I was so withdrawn and pulled into myself.
No medication seemed to help until one doctor suggested something unconventional, the drug Ritalin, which is typically prescribed for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Roman says it helped her loosen her tongue so she could do talk therapy. That therapy was intensive for years. Someone also asked Roman to become a mental health peer coach. She went through the training and met lots of other people with mental illness. They became her support network.
It really convinced me that there was really nothing wrong with me. You know, that I was ill, but I wasn't bad or broken or incurable.
She made such a turnaround that she boldly gave up her disability payments and went back to work. She enjoyed 16 years working for the Massachusetts Department of Rehabilitation Services before retiring. She and Craig Miller say they'll never be entirely free from thoughts of suicide, but they know how to manage the thoughts. The two have advice for people who love someone who is suicidal.
One, support them as much as possible. Let them know that you are there for them, but don't smother them. And two, do not make them feel guilty for having suicidal thoughts and struggling with that.
Ask them open-ended questions to get them to keep talking. Just listen non-judgmentally and compassionately to what they have to say. It's not so much what you say, it's how you listen.
And Roman suggests share the message that most depression is treatable. Though hard to see when in the throes of it, there is hope. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Lynn Joliker.